Okay, so we're here at Teacher Talk, and the number is 213-252-0998. We have Neil Chertkoff today, and we got Mark Musgrath. Neil is with SAVE, and Mark is a... And Neil's also a retired teacher, and Mark is a current history teacher at Santee Education Complex. And I'm Nick Richard, currently at Young Oak Kim Academy Middle School. So, hi, Neil.
Good morning. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I am very fine. Thank you very much. We're going to have Mark call in a couple minutes. You know Mark?
Yes, I do.
And how'd you come to be here today?
Well, I got introduced to Kill Radio by Mark Hemphill, and he pointed out that Kill Radio is an excellent source trying to make more contacts, helping people to reach other working class forces, to break the corporate media blockade on truthful information getting out to the people. And when Mark told me about this, I didn't really understand how powerful this could be, but now I realize that hey, we got to use the 21st century media for outreach, right, and try to reach people, because the working people need to be organized. They lack organization and tactics to fight back against the cutbacks.
All right, so now what is SAVE?
I represent SAVE. SAVE is the Social Alternative Voice for Action. It was born
Can you hold on a sec?
Yeah. Sure.
SAVE was born out of the struggle within UTLA two years ago against the take-back contract that the Los Angeles Unified School District and the Sacramento politicians, both Democrats and Republicans, imposed on the public schools. And that meant a tremendous amount of RIF teachers, that's reduction in force, layoffs of teachers. And when the regular teachers are laid off, some of them are able to come back as substitutes. But of course, when they do that, they move into the substitute jobs, and the substitute teachers lose their jobs. And I came up as I'm a retiree, but I came up as an activist because I know many teachers, both classroom teachers and substitute teachers, and I felt that the collaboration of the Los Angeles School District and the union together had worked to impose this kind of disgraceful take-back contract on teachers, allowing for about 2,100 layoffs. And when we did this, at this time, when the layoffs went down and substitute teachers were not getting their calls and work, more teachers started to enter the fray and become interested in doing some things.
And what year was this?
This was 2009.
Yeah,
this
sure.
was the August and September.
All right, let's go to Mark real quick, and we'll come back. Hey, Mark.
How you doing, Nick?
Good. I think that, okay, so this is Mark Hemphill, retired teacher, and you want to say what organizations that you're affiliated with at all? Or?
Well, for the most part, let's start right off with Kill Radio, and after that would be perdaily.com, which is was created and is edited by Leonard Eisenberg, a primary writer there. He also has quite a bit of his work showing up on LA Progressive, which is another sort of, I guess you call it a web journal, but with much bigger circulation. I think about 700,000 hits per month or something like that. And then, of course, I have a association with the members of SAVE, which Neil represents. I'm not one of their direct membership, but let's say we exchange information frequently.
All right, and you did you were subbing for this show for about a month. And,
yeah, 4 or 5 weeks.
And that went well. And so, what you're going to give us some news?
Yeah, I want to keep the ball rolling here because it's been pretty lively from what Bennett has, our DJ Bennett has informed me. The downloads on the podcast have been pretty good, and we certainly want to keep that up because we want as many people as possible to be informed on what's going on in education. You know, normally on a program like this, you would think you'd be talking about curriculum, implementation, behavior management, classroom management, things along those lines. But in crisis times like this, you suddenly have this whole new series of topics that you have to address because, well, they're threatening.
So what do you got for us today?
Well, let me start off from the top here so I can get through it. You can get back to Neil because I know he's got a lot to say, and he's going to take off on what I'm saying, too, and I'm sure he's going to comment on it and probably more at length. But what I'd like to bring to your attention is a few days ago, the L.A. Times reported that the $4 billion projected windfall in the state budget, you know, that's going to be at least another around $440 million out of public schools, colleges, libraries, elder care. And you know what that means. If the money's not there, more furlough days, more reductions in force. So that's not good news for us at all. The main criterion for the state doing this is they need to pay off the bond houses first rather than seeing to the list of those who will suffer that I just mentioned. And of course, this is big business gets paid off because they're the donors to every member of the political parties that now run California. That's the money that gets them elected. So you know they're going to pay off those bond houses first.
Okay, so that's $440 million. That's going to have to be not. That's going to have to be not there.
If the windfall falls, you know, in other words, it doesn't come through, that's what we face. That's pretty serious. So, maybe Neil will say more about that. But let me move on, though. In the UTLA Board of Directors, there was a proposal, and this comes from Francisco Martinez, who was phoned in over at Kill Radio a couple of times, and he's always a good source of information. In fact, he runs his own show on KPFK, you know, Latino programming. So he stays abreast of what's going on. What he was requesting is this. Apparently, and you don't have to look far for this, substitute teachers are being decimated. You know, there's supposed to be something like around 5,000 of them. That number's way down now. We don't know how far down, but the district is just dispensing with them because they're getting all the subs they're going to need off of the reductions in force, those people who convert to being priority subs. What the proposal here to the figures on the number of inadequate service reports that have been issued to subs over the past year and a half or so. I mean, an inadequate service report can refer to you as being incompetent or unable to run a classroom, right down to impropriety. And the fact is that the motion here demands that those ISRs be investigated by UTLA according to collective bargaining agreements, because at this time, UTLA just lets these substitutes sink. They're gone. They're history.
So I guess what you're the second thing that you're telling us here after the $440 million gone is that we've got UTLA not adequately protecting these subs?
Yeah, because the vision is this. Whatever collusion occurs between the district and the union, is who cares? These RIF teachers will more than make up for it, and the number of them that will convert themselves over to priority subs because they still have bills to pay.
Okay, so we need to watch out for how subs are faring because a lot of, well, for one reason, because a lot of the RIF teachers are now subs.
It's not only a matter of professionalism, it's a matter of protecting yourselves.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks, Mark. What else is going on?
Okay, what I would say is this last Thursday, I think a lot of us probably missed it. In fact, I didn't even see it on the news, but maybe it was reported. There was a Stop the Budget Cut, Tax the Rich rally to do exactly what the title of that would suggest.
Where was the rally?
Yeah, and Neil can probably fill you in on that more. I saw the flyer on it, but I didn't take that down. But I think it was staged at a park, if I remember correctly. But apparently didn't receive much coverage, or else I wouldn't be telling you about it. We would have all seen it on the news.
That's true.
Yeah, so, I mean, we should be suspicious of things like that. And one last thing here that, again, I'm pretty sure Neil will go into. If you're a teacher, you need to be highly aware of, what is it, I think it's AB 114, I think that's the title of it. This is the stipulation that any new funds that come into the system through Sacramento will be devoted to bringing back those teachers who have been victims or suffered from the reduction in force. And this was addressed to Steve Zimmer recently, the member of the Board of Education that the union suggested that we all endorse teachers, all of you basically got him elected. But he was addressed on this, on enforcement of it, because the district is saying at this point that, look, the money they've used to bring back RIF teachers so far had nothing to do with this. It's prior to that money arriving, and it's very questionable as to whether or not the district will obey this stipulation, because they're already trying to find a way out of it. They're already arguing that it does not apply to them.
The stipulation is that it's AB 114.
Yes.
And it says what again?
It says that any new funds that come into the district by way of Sacramento have to be spent to restore those teachers who have been victims of the reduction in force.
And so one of the things that in the letter I saw, one of your emails that Steve Zimmer said, yeah, was that we need to enforce that?
He suggested that, and in fact, I was about to cover that. All right. What he started off by saying in response to an inquiry was he thanked everyone for reaching out to him about the AB 114, and he said our teachers have yet to be restored. He thinks that these teachers, their students and their families, every day, that they're constantly on his mind. Since his first day in office, he's taken steps locally and federally to minimize the effects of the recession on our children. Now, he goes on in reference to what you're saying to state that, I'm quoting this, a good share of it from a forward that was sent to me by Francisco Martinez again in response to what Zimmer is saying. But Zimmer says that federal education jobs bill will help stabilize schools in 2011-2012. But if this is true, why are we having the RIF? That doesn't make any sense.
I don't understand. What do you mean? What is the...
Zimmer is saying that the legislation is going to stabilize the schools. If the schools are stabilized, why are we riffing teachers?
No, but I thought you said he said it's going to stabilize the schools, not that it has stabilized.
He says, technically, what he says is that it will help. But if it will help, then what are we riffing for?
I think the riffs are the past, and the will help is in the future, I thought.
Well, the threat is right now more riffs.
Well, that's why we got to, I guess, enforce AB 114.
Yeah, we've got to do everything we can. But Zimmer goes on to say, but more importantly, LAUSD's employees have agreed to unprecedented sacrifices over the last 2 years that have saved thousands of jobs. But what he fails to mention here is that teachers were put, between the sword and the wall. What other choice did the district give them? To be clear on it, Superintendent John Deasy has not restored jobs. The school board has not restored jobs. In fact, Deasy and the school board have helped cut jobs, 1,300 at least at the moment.
That's right. Okay, so, yeah. But AB 114, good thing, bad thing?
It's a good thing if we can get the district to obey it.
Got it. Okay, thank
you,
Mark.
That's our job. And then Zimmer goes on to say that though, women and men of LAUSD and their union leadership have made the sacrifices so we could balance the budget and jobs could be restored. The union leadership didn't get cut with furlough days. The membership got cut. And, the leadership sacrificed nothing except union members.
Well, the leadership, they're not actually working in schools, right? They don't have classroom jobs.
Yeah, but remember that Zimmer stated that the union was part of the sacrifice.
Okay,
in other words,
so
the union specifically made sacrifices.
Yeah, it sounds like Zimmer may have misspoken when he said that.
I hope that's the case. But he goes on to say that I thank everyone who has taken furlough days, and I thank our labor leadership who put our children first at the negotiating table. But the job of a union is not to help the employer to balance their budget at the expense of its members. Actually, it's the responsibility of the LAUSD board to force politicians to adequately fund education. And that, again, goes back to legislation like AB 114.
There you go.
Yeah, and Zimmer also says to fully restore our certificated and classified positions and to defend against future cuts, we all need to work together to do three things this fall. Force the state of California to prioritize education. Okay, by doing what? How are we going to force them? The bill has been passed. What more do we need to force them? It's supposed to be law. He also goes on to say, this means pushing the legislature and the governor to pass an investment budget. This means working in conjunction with labor, civil rights, parent advocacy groups across California. Well, we're back to what about taxing the rich? That's not been mentioned. Zimmer says we need to push our Democratic majority to propose a budget including a reasonable revenue reduction balance that begins to restore our children and their schools to their rightful place among our priorities. What kind of actions are you organizing? I mean, what is he doing? He's saying this, but what action is he organizing to force the state to cough up the money to adequately fund education? I mean, we need to really get into this AB 114 if it's going to do anything, you know, like lobby Congress to pass the IDEA, Individuals with Disability Act, with fully funding it. That's actually renewing it. The original bill back in the 70s, according to the legislation, said that the federal government was supposed to fund programs like IDEA 100%. They have never funded those programs beyond 10%.
So, Mark, it sounds like the government, despite their laws, haven't funded things that they were supposed to fund, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And lastly here, Nick, so I don't take up more of your time, Zimmer says, toward conclusion, there is no more important federal education funding issue. Why then the district didn't mobilize the community and sue the federal government for not meeting its obligations? I mean, seriously, that's it. And he finally concludes by saying, together, let's begin the process of building a new narrative of hope and investment in our future. Yo, we need a movement, not a narrative. A narrative is just what's written on the page.
Yeah.
A narrative that changes the conversation as only the dreams of a new generation can. Dreams don't solve problems. Actions do.
Well, thank you, Mark. And, you know, let's get rid of that Zimmer, huh?
Well, Nick, you know, I'm with you behind. I'm behind you on that all the way. But keep in mind here, Nick, we actually, as a community, teachers followed the advice, the directions, and the coaxing of our union and got this guy elected. He would not have been elected without us.
Okay, so let's talk to him then.
We need to talk to him, and we should have the force to make him do what we. What he should be doing, not just what we want him to do, simply because we put him in on office. This whole thing about backing these board members, I think we all need to do a lot more research on it, because apparently UTLA hasn't.
So how are we going to force him?
Elections are coming up. We don't have to reelect the same board members.
Okay. Thank you very
much. I mean, we keep on putting people like Richard Vladovic in there that are nothing but petty potentates, small-time tyrants who have led their entire lives oppressing teachers. So why do we want these people in there?
I don't know. So I guess we'll get active in the next election.
Nick, I hope you're right, and I hope you, being the host of an education affirming program on Kill Radio, will make sure that people know that they need to do that.
Okay. Well, let's go, Neil. And thank you.
All right,
so much.
Thanks.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
You bet. So long now.
Bye.
Well, this brings up a number of questions. The question of a good example is bringing up the double talk and the fork-tongued nature of board members like school board members like Steve Zimmer.
Well, I thought Steve was like the only one who's ever been a teacher on the school board.
Right. Well, that's what he says. But he was a teacher. It's like the mayor, Villaraigosa, used to be a union organizer. Used to be. Obama, the president of the chief executive of U.S. capitalism, used to be a community organizer in the early 1990s. But the point is that these forces are not honest forces.
Well, can we really expect people at the board level to, you know, to look after our interests anyway? I mean, doesn't it have to be at the local level? Mark, wait, let's see if Mark has some.
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, I'm wondering, Neil, can we start with the big picture here with SAVE? Is it primarily focused on local educational issues? Is it wrapped up? Is it a national thing? I mean, of course, as we know, education is fundamentally a local issue. So what's your big picture into that? Is it just we need more funding? Is it stop the cuts? Is it, issues with the teacher contract. I mean, there's a lot of things there. What is your big picture here? Let's start with the foundation here and then move forward.
Okay. When SAVE was started, one of the fortuitous aspects when small organizations, rank-and-file organizations, get started, they seem to have a better effect when they're honest forces and they get started from the actual struggle itself. Now, SAVE wasn't created out of the blue. SAVE was created out of an actual struggle within UTLA from rank-and-file members, mainly substitutes, but also classroom teacher allies, against the budget cuts, against the increase in class sizes, against the increasing corporate-style harassment from administrators, and against plan cuts and health benefits, and also for quality education for our students. At this stage, LA schools, many of them, of course not all, but a good percentage of them are merely engaged in warehousing of youth. They are not engaging in education. The LAUSD regularly, even the 50 or 60% of the students that graduate from that manage to graduate from many high schools, many of them only have an eighth or ninth grade academic performance level in reading, math, and writing. And this is not due to the teachers. Teachers do not create curricula. Curricula is driven by the political system, and it is guided and enforced by a vast administration of bureaucrats over the teachers. This scapegoating of teachers for being the root cause of the problem is just nonsense. It's poppycock. It's a sham. It's a way that the corporations and their media mouthpieces cover up for the failures and the cuts in education, which gradually, bit by bit, cut away at the quality of education, mainly for our working class youth.
Mark.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is that SAVE was organized on one level to protect the interests of the substitutes who were being disproportionately impacted through the cuts, because as RIF teachers entered those pools, there was just too many subs, and then now the district, from what Mark was saying, is moving to get rid of subs perfunctory. I mean, I've actually heard that from some subs myself, that they're writing them up and just trying to ease them out. And secondarily, or in addition, I'm hearing you say there was, issues of the larger questions of school reform and I mean, everyone's talking about that. I mean, that is the issue. How do we increase academic achievement across all levels? What do you want the district to do? Let's get back into that with the Steve Zimmer questions and the board. I'm certainly really unhappy with the board. I'm somewhat optimistic about UTLA's efforts in getting Bennett Kaiser elected. But since it appears UTLA backed Zimmer, these guys just kind of do what they want. I mean, obviously they're never going to be a puppet, but what do we do? Where do we go from here? How can we deal with this situation?
Number one is by realizing what board members are. Board members are politicians, but they more or less play the role of junior lieutenants. They take the orders from Sacramento. They take the orders from the state legislature, the assembly, the Senate in Sacramento, who directs them in terms of how the funds are to be, how school funds are to be spent and where they are to be spent. The board members are junior lieutenant politicians. But to be elected as a board member, the power of board members is not just the direction of funds. The fact is that the Los Angeles Unified School District has a yearly budget of near $9 billion. And much of this is in terms of the of supporting the employees, but a major part of this goes to contractors, corporate contractors. And those corporate contractors give heavily, huge amounts of money to elect board members to do the bidding for things that these corporations want
what
done.
What are we talking about here primarily? School construction, or are we talking about textbook curriculum? What are we talking about here? Where's the bulk of this so-called contract money going?
The bulk of it, much of it does go to construction. But other parts of it, major parts of it, do go to textbook sales, vendors, other people that do certain advisory, so-called advisory work to improve education. Most of these people, of course, are in the six-figure range. And there is an army of contractors and bureaucrats, near 500, that don't even work on school sites in the Los Angeles Unified School District. And if you tried to locate them, you would need a few regiments to find these people, because you can't even find them, most of them, doing any job.
Okay, and your concern, because, I mean, let's face it, the district's got $9 billion to spend. Obviously, they're going to contract out for certain services, what have you. That's inevitable of any public organization that's going to be spending that much money. There's nothing unique there. But what I'm trying to understand is your concern is what? That these contractors are eating up the budget excessively, or these contractors are part of this larger, quote-unquote, neoliberal agenda? What are we concerned about here?
We're concerned about both. We're concerned about the fact that that these people have a crass profit motive in gaining contracts from the Los Angeles Unified School District, plus the fact that many of the projects are counter to the actual material needs of working class kids in our inner cities and in the school district as a whole.
Now, I'm trying to get some clarity here. What, quote unquote, are the material needs of our students? How is that to be determined? How do you divine that knowledge? And I mean, I'm perfectly willing to admit that they are contrary to the needs, but what is John Q. Public out there? Why do they think that SAVE understands the material needs?
Well, because SAVE is made up of a group of teachers and community activists that are close to most of these people are either teachers, retired teachers, or they are community activists that work closely and have gone through the Los Angeles Unified School District system. Now, you asked me for an example of this, about the crass interests of corporate contractors. One of the major things now that's eating away like parasites is the turnover of public schools over to private interests.
Charters?
Based
what do you mean
on,
by private interests?
Yeah, by so-called charter schools. Now, there are different kinds of charters. There's different forms of charters. There's absolute charters, there's limited charters, there's independent charters, but the charter schools are a road to profiteering private administrators and corporate interests. Let me give you an example. There was one of the substitutes. I won't give his name because he needs to be protected. Dug up a bevy of tax returns from various charter schools, and the amount of money that the administrators make in these schools is enormous. The average school, like just for a middle school, the principal, the main administrator, was making near $250,000 a year, and his associates, the associate administrators, the next three or four near the top of the ladder, were making $170,000 or $180,000 a year just in base pay alone. And so,
do the teachers make more?
Excuse me.
Do the teachers at those schools make more?
No. In fact, initially, when the charter schools come into operation, they make near what a regular public school teacher makes. But as the charters take over, the charter school teachers will be subject to the laws of the market. And as unemployment, high unemployment, drives down the living standards of workers, it also basically drives down their wage standards and both their salaried wage and their social wage. So what you have is a system that is driving teachers' wages and standards of living, as well as the other school employees, down. Also, charter schools have their own separate contracts. Some of the charter schools are still union, but they have separate contracts, and those teachers that teach in charter schools don't even have the limited freedoms, that regular public school teachers have. And that's why even the corporate media has reported lately on the large amount of burnout of the teachers that opted to teach in charter schools, because their system is a direct corporate model applied to the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Do you know about the elect to work so-called agreements that are being talked about right now that would allow teachers to give up their union contract and then, but still somehow be part of the union? Have you guys heard of that?
Yeah.
Are you referencing Verdugo?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Okay, anyway.
Elect to work. In New TLA, they're talking about it now.
Yeah, I think this is a trap. Mm-hmm. Because, not because the union contract is so wonderful, mm-hmm. and that UTLA protects its members, because it's one of its greatest failings is it doesn't even protect its dues payers. But releasing these people from, allowing the administration and the district and the private administrators that are running schools for profit, to determine what the lives of teachers are going to be like in a classroom, is turning the teachers into automatons and robots. Because the teachers to protect themselves, will have to reorganize from the base and start anew to organize, because they're going to find themselves atomized, pinched into a corner, and constantly harassed and threatened by these bloated, overpaid administrators.
Well, the union's strength is already shrinking because of charter schools taking away people from the district.
That is. And one of the problems is that the charter schools breaking the teachers, it's a way also to break the organization of teachers. Because if you have teachers that are atomized in one school or another and have no social connections, and then they are broken away from the rest of the teachers, that breaks the power of the teachers to fight back against things like budget cuts, higher school sizes, harassments, bogus write-ups, and the teachers' force as a whole, along with its ability to unite with parents, students, and other site workers, is drastically weakened. And that's what the powers that be want.
Question mark?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a complex web. What does SAVE propose to move forward?
Okay.
Is the pressure going to be at the state level? We heard Mark discussing issues of adequate funding.
Yeah.
My main concern is, and obviously SAVE is a grassroots organization, is how are you going to sell this to John Q. Public, who sees that nearly half the budget of the state of California goes to education, K-12 and higher ed. And we're sitting here as an organization, as teachers, just saying, you know, we want more. And John Q. Public suffering from a 12% unemployment. I know the answer is tax the rich, but, you know, these kind of things are nebulous. Aren't you concerned that these things will impact the economy negatively? We hear all the time of companies and businesses moving out of California. Isn't it the proverbial goose? We don't want to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs here.
This is what John Q. Public is saying.
Yeah, that's what many of them think, because they get bombarded 24/7 by corporate media propaganda. That's why we need more radio outlets like Kill Radio that allows people from the communities, working people, the common people, the useful producers, to have access to airwaves to refute the lies and distortions of the corporate media. For instance, the question of, yes, they say on paper, they have a state law that says that 40% of all the of general funds are supposed to be used to support state education. But that never happens, because before the amount of general funds is released, about 25 to 30% of those funds are siphoned off to pay the bond houses, the Wall Street bond houses and other speculators' bonds to pay off not only the interest but the principal on the loans that the state has taken out over the years.
Well, what could you do about that?
Okay, that means that people have. That's why the question of this will not be solved by merely getting in an election booth every year or two and voting for some slick, glib-tongued politicians, whether they be Democratic or Republican. Because these politicians are, let's face it, they are paid mostly by corporate money to get up and spread a pack of nonsense that they have no intention of fulfilling promises that would benefit the working class. The election booth is not the main source of power. The main source of power for working people is their ability to meet in their neighborhoods and to start to build new neighborhood, community, and industrial worksite organization. And as they do this more and more, as you are starting to see in other countries around the world, workers are starting to come out in mass action. They are starting to organize because of the weight of the cuts and the demands for sacrifice from the workers and the producers, while the corporate heads and the very rich, they are allowed off the hook. And in fact, they are even becoming more bloated.
Okay, Neil, are you suggesting that we need Greek-style disturbance, London-style disturbances for this? I don't think that's going to really sell with John Q. Public. John Q. Public wants a orderly society and is going to look to the ballot box. I mean, what are you calling for here?
I'm calling for things like the working people have their power in their organization. Not a ballot box that's corrupted by money and by finance.
I think at some level, Mark, that you would also agree that if something's going to be changed, it's going to be changed at the community level, not by just voting once every 4 years for somebody's going to do it at Sacramento. I mean, you would agree with that, right, Mark?
Well, raising consciousness is always a good thing. All social movements attempt to do that, and I certainly think that's a viable strategy. It's often a long-term one, but Neil was suggesting, something about, it seemed to be implied to me, when he refers to, people over in Europe, because what I'm seeing over in Europe is a lot of social disturbances in the street,
okay, but that's one
in
thing
the name
that's
of fighting back against
Neil,
austerity.
I think Neil was also referring to, he was talking about workers controlling industry. And that is basically the opposite of the privatization movement, where you have workers no longer having any say over the school site, or much less, or possibly, I don't know.
Well, again, my main thing would be, we start drifting pretty far afield. Maybe that is ultimately the answer, is you're talking a systemic change, that the whole system, hey, bring it all down, man, has got to be changed. We're trying to focus here on the education situation. Oftentimes I hear people just go into this kind of, it's a systems issue, and I'm not sure, you're going to get much traction with calling for revolution, peaceful or otherwise, in this. John Q. Public wants decent schools for their people.
He just mentioned Europe. He didn't call for revolution. Are you calling for revolution? Maybe. Why not?
In the future, when the working people and their allies are organized and have the consciousness as a mass movement, to demand and to take hold of the wealth that they produce, and they direct their efforts to take that wealth. Yes, that kind of revolution will be necessary and will be carried out. But we are a long way from that. Let's face that.
Are there many examples of this kind of thing that you're talking about, taking control of?
Well, it doesn't happen very often. I mean, okay. It happens maybe once, twice, three times in a century. But we are living in times that are, you can see the social system, the capitalist social system as it exists in its domination over the world, that its claws, its tentacles, are only creating more pain and suffering for working people, not just in the underdeveloped countries or the semi-developed countries, but now we see that this cancer of capitalist profit-making is even taking its taking its effect in the metropolitan countries, in the advanced countries. We can see this everywhere. And in all these countries, Europe, in Asia, and in South America, and the United States, and Canada, mm-hmm. You can see this happening. The point is that the working people themselves, they can't be ordered about to make revolution or just told to make revolution. They experience the objective conditions under the under capitalist domination, and that drives them to a point where they want to fight back.
Okay. Well, before we even talk about revolution and taking over the whole capitalist system, I know that there's a lot of good plans worked out for what gets instituted once the revolution has been achieved. I mean, it probably would start at this point with just organizing parents, right?
Well, yeah. At the base. Now, we're not talking about any kind of immediate social revolution. We're just talking about mainly a defensive struggle now, so people don't see their lives and their livelihoods driven down to a state of mass pauperization. And what I'm saying is that especially in Western countries, but throughout the world, the way that money and finance and political monopolies control the ballot, it is very difficult for working people, the useful producers, to have an effect merely using ballots, because the point is that historically the power of the working people, of all nationalities and groups, comes through their ability to organize and to fight in their own class and social interest for their needs. Mm-hmm. And specific needs of education, that would mean that teachers, students, parents in their communities from the base, but linking up with other sections of the city and the district, and far beyond that, would have to organize their own actions. And the only actions, the main actions that the capitalist system and their government understands are actions that will hit them in the pocketbook.
Okay, and I think you have something, right? What's your, you have an action plan.
Yeah, we do have an action plan. And the action plan is, it's realistic. It is not utopianism, and it's not pie in the sky, because it's been carried out before. In the 1960s, in this country and in countries throughout the world.
What is it?
It is the concept of the mass boycott. Having parents, students, teachers come together in their school sites, in the communities and wider, and organizing for a walkout. Now, we realize that this may not be uniform. It may be sporadic at first. But the walkout concept will also allow the parents and the teachers to see that they have the social power when they get organized, and it will do away and erase a lot of the pessimism that people have about social change, because they'll be working together for common aims, and they will also be become a material force to combat things like sacrifices that capitalism demands by workers to prop up their unjust system.
Okay, Mark.
Well, he's right. Boycotts have been used. The walkout, we've seen that in the past. Okay, I mean, so what are the steps that people take? I mean,
well, people, no one group, no one community group or small action group is going to be able to organize this alone. This will take a merging of different, and I mean honest, grassroots level organizations, not necessarily large ones, to go directly to the school sites and work in the school sites, the teachers and the students, to organize this kind of struggle.
Okay, we got a call.
Teacher talks.
Yeah, Nick, I wanted to add something to what Neil is saying on this boycott concept. He's giving a version of it, which...
Okay, we got a call.
Yeah, Nick, I wanted to add something to what Neil is saying on this boycott concept.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah,
giving, you can't listen to the delay.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry. Here, let me take care of that, man.
Okay.
Good. Are we good?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I understand that both Neil and Mark see the potential for these boycotts, and I'm completely in agreement with them there. But what I wanted to add to it is this. Let's qualify it. The type of boycott that's been suggested has been that of organizing parents and students to report to a different location where something along the line of substitute teachers that are currently not in service and retired teachers offer instruction. It's not just pull the kids out and have them march around with signs, which I understand has its part too, but there's more to it than that. And the idea behind this type of boycott is we're not calling upon the teachers to step out of the classroom. If the teachers step out of the classroom, they're subject to punitive measures on the part of the administration, which will come rapidly. We don't want to find mass numbers of teachers being subjected to any such penalties. So the early stages of this type of boycott, we want to keep them out of it. We appreciate their sympathy, and we appreciate their cooperation in the sense that they're not impeding a boycott, but it wouldn't be productive to have them perform in a manner where it puts their livelihoods at risk.
Neil?
This is a good point, that obviously... When this type of action is organized, the organizers, I don't mean just the leaders or the spokesmen of such a boycott movement, but the rank and file themselves will meet, and they'll have meetings and discussions, and they will determine the tactics that they need to do to carry this out. It's that too is something that we can't dictate, but obviously the threat from the political government and from other, establishment and reactionary forces to attack such a movement is quite profound. And the movement itself, as it would build momentum, is going to have to deal with this. But I don't think it's dealt with in the best way by talking about what we can't do, all the limitations to what we putting a movement like this in a corral and saying that you can't do this or can't do that. Obviously, there are limitations. There are limitations that people will have to decide as they struggle of how far they want to push this. But the point is that the movement itself will have the social power to force the political establishment and their corporate string pullers to back off. And that is how you build the momentum for forcing the system to tax the rich. Because the system, it's like Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without the demand. And by the demand, he means the struggle fought out itself. In his time, it was a different form of struggle. But today, it's a form of struggle of working people to protect and advance their own interests. And by using the boycott method, they are showing their social strength, and also by using the boycott method, it can encourage other workers in other industries to take the needed actions to fight back against the cuts and the takeaways.
All right, who wants to talk? We got two marks.
Yeah, I basically agree with that. The idea behind this is not to put more pressure and hardship on teachers, but rather to put them on a road to reducing or escaping the those very factors. And keeping them as far away from risk, I think, would be a priority.
Okay. Well, if I may, Mark and Neil, obviously you gentlemen have done some serious thinking about this, and it kind of sounds good in terms of, you know, you've thought about it and where it will lead to. But the concern is, isn't it going to just be a whole lot easier just to use the ballot? I mean, we have redistricting in the state of California that's going through. It does appear that the Democratic Party will capture the two-thirds necessary in the state assembly and the state senate. And just work it. The idea that you're going to have, you know, the whole district of 700,000 students or whatever it is, which I believe if the current social mood continues, you know, it's possible you could even, you know, pull this off. But it seems like there's going to be more channels for or easier change through the ballot. I'm not sure what the objection to the ballot is. Here.
Well, Mark, you know, in addressing that, of course, it would be, I think, absurd for anyone to think that if we were successfully organized a boycott, that it's going to take in anywhere near that number of students that you mentioned. The fact is that even if 25% of them participated in it, it would be crippling to the district in respect to ADA. But to go on beyond that, whether we take it to the ballot box or we use this approach of boycotts, we're still faced with that same dilemma. We have to capture the imagination of the public. That's going to be a hurdle no matter what approach we use.
Let's remember this about the budget cuts and the attacks on the schools and health services, that these are bipartisan attacks. These are not just carried out by caricatures of the GOP and the Republicans dressed up in fascist uniforms. This is the Republicans and the Democrats ruling, and they're doing this because they are financed by big business and they are ordered up to do this, and also the system itself to have any kind of recovery for capital to amass more wealth and compete demands that working people make these sacrifices, and that is the problem we face. The cuts in Wisconsin, it's true the Republicans are the main party in power, and so they but the Democrats have worked with them as a tag team in Minnesota. That's how they got to the point where they had these reactionary laws in California. The Republicans are not on top. This is a Democratic Party-run state. This is not just the GOP. The GOP tags along with the Democrats. So merely voting for one group of slick-tongued manipulators or another is not going to change anything. And even when they do pass laws or bills that claim to help or represent working people, they themselves do not allow them to be enforced because of the pressure of corporate power. So to go to the ballot is actually to demand that people put their faith in mere dropping little pieces of paper into a box every year or two is taking away the real power that they have. Their power as to organize and their power in numbers organized.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Neil, and I have no disagreement with it. But I think I'm guessing that both Mark and Nick would agree with me on this. In any such process like a boycott, there are risks. We're taking sort of a gamble that by doing a boycott, it will positively influence the public to not just go to the ballot box in the direction that we would hope they would go, but to be adamant about that, to where these are not just cursory votes.
Yeah.
No, they require action. They do not allow legislators to accept the vote and then do as they please, but rather obey what the voters are asking them to do. So there are risks inherent to this. There's no guarantee that a boycott's going to produce the exact results that we want, other than depriving the district of ADA, which would certainly be a major accomplishment in itself, in that they would have to stand up and take notice. And if you deprive the district of ADA, of course, now you have an end to the media blackout. That's something that's going to be covered. It will no longer be a silent majority trying to make their way into recognition. That much I would say in summary.
Well, Mark and Neil, what about, I mean, yeah, okay, if the whole point is to break a media blackout, okay, you're going to break the media blackout, but then you're going to be subject to the propaganda of the corporate media that you are bemoaning. That John and Ken here in L.A. in their drive time slot will simply make hay of the efforts. Of course they're going to cover it, and they're going to say, look at these left-wing community organizers. Here they're at it again, blah, blah, you know, the trying to rabble-rouse among the undocumented kids. What, you know, that's just going to happen, and so you're back to square one. You know, you're going to be marginalized in the press, and, you know, what have we gained?
Okay, let me answer this. One of the things that social movements also do with their demand actions themselves is they energize people to do things like create alternative media. Most effective alternative media comes somehow out of mass movement and independent struggle. And one of the things that will rise out of things like boycotts and strikes is alternative media that will combat the Ken and Johns, that will expose them as this shills for the corporations that they are. So we don't seek to, we're not going to have the ability to get on radio or television right now.
Okay, but this is what I want to say. I mean, obviously all social movements have to begin with a consensus. Even in the American Revolution, you had 13 disparate colonies, different religions, different economic issues, yet they agreed to the limited consensus that after a certain point of struggle and consciousness raising, that independence was going to be the best road. But it was a limited consensus. You guys are on your way to building that limited consensus. I frankly don't see it yet. You got to keep doing it. But because you can say, well, they're corporate shills all you want, but there's John Q. Public out there that listens to them. They're not all corporate shills. The mass actions in Wisconsin resulted in essentially no gains. The Republicans held on those recall elections, which I think the recall and the ballot is a useful means. But you have to be realistic. The public is largely divided on these questions. And I don't think that mass actions in the street, and frankly, Neil, I think you have to admit, you're implying disorder, i.e. Greek style, London style. Look what the reaction was. Okay, you had working class people out there defending their businesses. They're not going to take kindly to this kind of thing. I just think people don't want disorder. They want reforms. Everyone understands education's problematic, but they're not going to want this kind of...
What, let's just look at the last walkout, because there were other walkouts. What resulted from them?
The last walkout that I can, if you're referring to the immigration issue, was the last one that I saw. In 2006-07, there were some limited walkouts, especially at my school. And there was even quite a number of organizing on it. And it did have, for a day or two, the big one in 06. The school was, for a day, you know, pretty empty on that day that they had the Grand March in L.A. It did stop the punitive H.R. 4477 or whatever that bill was. I mean, it ultimately died. But we're still 6 years on, and there's been no immigration reform. So, I mean... Unless you're saying, you know, essentially we're calling for this general strike kind of idea. This goes back to Sorrell. It's an interesting romantic idea. I just don't think you're going to have to build a huge consensus. There, you can point to some historical examples where, you know, it's been effective. But, you know, I could point to as many historical examples where there's been a backlash. And so, you know, to me it's like, let's just use the ballot and raise consciousness that way. If we elect people and they sell us out, you just recall them and you go back to the ballot and you throw. You know, I understand that takes a long time and that's not going to meet the immediate needs of someone who feels that, you know, this is justice delayed is justice denied. But, you know, I don't know. I think you're rolling the dice with this kind of direct action. I certainly have no objection to direct action. You know, it is a valid means of political strategy. But you know, let's face it, it's a roll of the dice.
Okay, you know what? We got we have two positions kind of well established here. It's 1 p.m. I was kind of trying to think of the show as being an hour long show. Do you think that we need another half an hour, or can we? You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
About a half an hour.
All right, let's keep going then.
Okay, Nick, but let's face it, we all have to accept the fact that everything comes at a risk. Recalls are rarely successful. So, we've seen what voting does. So everything, including walkouts, comes at a risk. You have to start somewhere. You may not get your candidate elected the first time around. You go back and you try again. I guess if a boycott doesn't work the first time, you go back and you try again. But you say to yourself that given the student base that we have, organizing a boycott is a possibility. It's not an impossibility. It's not a wild thought. So again, I have to affirm that everything, every action comes with a risk.
Okay.
This question of consensus. This kind of implies a society that doesn't exist. Like every other society, the United States is a very, very heavily class divided society. And hence that you have large groups of people that by nature, by intrinsically, have different material and social interests. So the struggle itself that's going on in the schools is part of that. And the struggle is being waged in a one-sided way, because those on top, those with the money, the property, the ability to speculate, the ability to bribe, the ability to enforce, they have the monopoly. It was said before that the actions that we are promoting, the building the boycott and the strike actions, are creating, will create strife and disorder. There's already enough strife and disorder in this society.
Well, why not put a lot of energy and community organizing into the process that's already in place for electing people? Why don't you have a candidate and all
because
that?
Because of the two-party monopoly. The Democrats and Republicans, they make the election laws, too. And they are not going to allow any serious third party to even have much of a chance to get on the ballot. And even if they did get on the ballot, the media would either, show them in bed with Osama bin Laden, or they would totally black them out. They will not have the access that the corporate-sponsored candidates have. That is why the power of the working people is not to rely on media circuses like elections.
Well,
elections have been turned into corporate-sponsored and financed media circuses. Look at the conventions of the Democrats and Republicans. Everything is already choreographed. It's all agreed to. They give their sweet, glib-tongued speeches about they all claim to want to help the people and aid in building a better and more equitable society. But these parties are the parties in power, so they are the ones that must accept the accountability for what they have done. And you're not going to do this by sitting there deciding, trying to decide on a choice between which group of political puppets want in power.
So it sounds like you don't believe in the system of free elections that they say that we have. But
they aren't free.
And you believe that it's going to be, like, to get back to what Mark was talking about, being easy. Is it easier to reform the system of elections so that it is accountable, or is it easier to somehow do away with the entire government and start from scratch with
historically people that you trust? The way that the methods that working people have used in so many countries for various forms of struggle, both semi-legal, legal, and illegal, is that they have to have the experience of political action in various forms. This goes far beyond this passive reading of some voter list or being presented with a list of names of people you don't even know, and many people don't even know what...
That's voting, but there's also running for office, and running for office isn't passive.
Yeah.
I mean, that involves community organizing.
There is community organizing, but these people are dishing out a platform which they will, even if they were honest, they wouldn't be able to implement it. because
What if you had a candidate?
Our candidate would not be if there was a person that was running as a candidate, they wouldn't be there to promote themselves and their careers like the existing candidates are. They would be mm-hmm. there to promote the interests of working people and their needs.
Well, how
and
about
right now? Right
how about
now,
that? How about giving somebody the political experience that you're talking about?
No,
Even
to do something like you're talking about. Even to perform this, they would need a social movement that is independent of the Democrats and Republicans.
What's wrong with that?
And there's nothing wrong with that, but that has to be built.
So then,
the question is, how can that be built? It can't be built by passive debate alone. It has to be built by organizing, community organizing, and people meeting and discussing and seeing that their own needs cannot be met by the political apparatus over them now. If they have the social experience of going of doing these things, then it's likely that they come to conclusions that we need an alternative.
I think, if I may, we're
really far afield from kind of the narrow idea of education issue, but you know, Neil and Mark seem to be coming from the systematic systems analysis point of view, and that's fine. But, you know, again, one has to recognize that, I am by no means saying the ballot box is an effective means of voicing public opinion. All the reasons that you point out, the issue of money, the issue of institutional arrangements, you know, they've just made it a lot harder in the state with the new primary election system that totally excludes third parties. So they're only going to take the top two, and in many cases it's going to be two Democrats or two Republicans. It's not, you know, the third parties are going to be completely wiped out due to those arrangements. So, you know, I understand that that's going to be problematic. But when you talk of material concerns, material interests, one has to remember, and all I'm simply trying to point out is Southern California is deeply divided ideologically. It is also incredibly diverse. So when we talk about the working class, what are we talking about here? People on the West Side uniting with Latino, parents in South L.A. We have Asian community, Black community. My only point is you have to build a consensus, and by consensus I mean a political consensus that one can move forward on. I'm not talking. Yes, American society is deeply rooted in conflict of interest. That is true, but I'm talking about you have to have a consensus in terms of your political agenda that you can unite all of these disparate groups. Frankly, a lot of people are happy with the status quo, and you know, my point is you got to do the organizing, you know, and I think just again any kind of direct action, you know, especially if it becomes really militant, runs the risk of provoking a severe backlash.
I think that this is kind of a one-sided analysis. You're talking about, let's remember here that the working people and the producers are the ones that are being attacked and assaulted. It's their living it's our living standards and our communities and our environment that's being raped and pillaged by the profit system. And the profit system are the ones that stand behind the politicians that are engineering the cuts. So getting back to the question of how are we going to fight for better schools, the main front of that right now is the battle line over the fighting the budget cuts, and to fight the budget cuts, social power has to be implemented. You can't listen to double fork-tongued liars like Steve Zimmer on the school board, who when he ran for election he said he was against charter schools. He said he was for hiring more teachers and having less crowded classrooms. But what does he do once he gets elected? He supports charter schools. He supports privatization on a limited basis,
Okay, we're moving back into the realm of direct education issues, which is good.
My question then is,
if we're talking, if your numbers are correct, which I assume they are, $9 billion budget, 700,000 students, you know, let's do the math. What is that per student? And what do you have a number in mind of how much money would be adequate? You know, what are some concrete reforms you'd like to see in this district? Is it 20-to-1 classrooms? Is it more teacher pay? What exactly, on a concrete level, as an educator, Nick's an educator, you're a retired educator, what is it that, you know, other than just saving jobs? Because, you know, clearly the state, you know, there's a huge economic recession, which has affected tax revenues in the state.
You got to remember here that students and teachers are not statistics. That's one of the things that the system makes us do. They make us say, well, it's like a sports game. How many points do you have? How many people do you have here? How many there? Let's take account. We're dealing with human lives here, people's futures, the futures of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and millions of people in these schools. And you can't treat them as mere statistics. That is accepting the corporate method of dealing with problems. They deal with counting things in terms of statistics and then turning those statistics into dollars.
Could we hear from Mark on this? Do you have any concrete proposals?
In terms of how much should be spent? I understand your concerns in terms of, let's say we go back to the basic idea of a walkout, that there is a backlash. If we're going to do a walkout, let's say we're successful at organizing this, that success would be contingent upon, one, again, having a system of instruction that takes place during those same hours that school would be instruction, be in the course of instruction. We certainly do not want students wandering around. We most certainly don't want to be part and parcel of any vandalism, mayhem, or anything along those lines. This is supposed to be a social process, not an anarchist process. So, I think we need to qualify the limitations that we can use, even in the event that we're able to pull off a boycott.
Well, I hear you. I want to get back to, okay, let's assume we can do that, and you've thought about it, and it's great. What are we fighting for? I mean, how much more money does the system need? Or, I mean, what are we asking the system? I mean, obviously, I'm against the increasing expansion of charters. Obviously, I think, you know, teachers should probably be paid more. But at the end of the day, the argument is, you know, hey, we pay taxes, we get certain public services back. One of those is a free public education. What's the output there? I mean, Neil talks in very, you know, metaphoric language that everyone's a human being, and almost like it's the sky's the limit. But, you know, the reality of economics is, and I teach economics, is we deal in a world of scarcity. We have to make choices regardless of what our social systems are, okay? So what is your idea of a education system that's going to allow individuals to be fully self-actualized? I mean, what does that look like? And what are the resources? I mean, because some might say, you know, we have enough money now. It's just the way it's being used and the choices that are being made in the system. Why not just focus on rearranging the way the money's spent rather than saying, well, it's a matter of just more money, because aren't we just hurling more money on top of a system that is sclerotic and unresponsive?
I think you more or less answered your own question. In fact, to take the metaphor out of it and bring, let's say, hardcore reality or tangible reality into it, I would say do exactly what you just said. Certainly, we would like to see more money go into education. But before we do that, we need to turn our attention specifically to the money that is there that's being misused. Let's use LA Unified specifically as an example. We're in a district that still has more administrators per student than any other in the country, and we have the highest number of administrators per student in the country. That has to stop. We're in a district that's building new schools with declining enrollment and while shutting down older schools. That has to stop. We're in a district that has innumerable numbers of what paid consultants who are former administrators who are collecting the same salaries they collected when they were administrators, if not better, and producing nothing. That has to stop. I'm just picking out three most outstanding examples. If we started doing that, you know, immediately, right there, there would be a huge amount of extra money available, which we could apply back into the classroom. I mean, I would start right there rather than waiting for Sacramento to allocate more money to us, given we've seen the way the wind can change so fast on that from week to week. But no, let's make better use of our resources that we know are available. All of these undisclosed expenditures the district seems to get away with, even after every audit in which the audit reveals that there is money there that they can't tell what direction it's in, and the district's only rationale for that is, well, it's going in the right direction, but never any clear explanation of it. No, let's know how much money is there and where it's going, and what our power is to redirect it to the classroom or whatever we see fit.
Yeah. One of the things that drives the need for a change in tactics and strategy, a massive, sharp change, is the crisis itself, the severity of the crisis, and the fact that the existing institutions, even the institutions of so-called reform, such as the Democratic Party and the trade unions, have utterly failed in terms of facing the realities that the common people face. The pain that they're facing, and in fact, these organizations have capitulated to the more conservative and reactionary forms of corporate reaction. That is why the cuts are being carried out. As I pointed out in the state of California, you're dealing with a political system here that is dominated by the Democratic Party. This is not just the GOP. We have a situation where the politicians themselves, like Steve Zimmer, this Sharpie, this slicker, actually went before the news media last week, or 2 weeks ago, and was praising the union leaders, these six-figured plus perks, fattened up bureaucrats that had the trade unions, for helping the school district balance their budget. On the backs of who? On the backs of the students and their own dues payers. Now let's get down to the brass tacks, the ABCs. Employers have their interests, whether they are private employers or state employers or a combination of the two. Real unions are supposed to defend their dues payers. They're not supposed to come to agreements with the employers on how to balance the employer's budget. That's the employer's problem. They have a fattened up little, the LAUSD has a fattened up army of over 500 off-site bureaucrats that make an average of $125,000 a year. For doing what? Drinking coffee? Signing a few new papers each day? If that. And Zimmer, when he spoke, actually thanked the union leaders for helping the LA Unified School District balance their budget on the backs of their members. And that is not the solution. That is part of the problem. That is why you need organizations like SAVE and others that spring up from the rank and file to oppose this kind of collusion and this kind of robbery.
Okay, so what's the purpose of this show here? Is it to give an overview of just all of what's going on among teachers? Yeah, right? Or is it to come up with a, yeah, what do you think?
I think it's to community and alternative radio. It's one of its main jobs is to help people move their ability to struggle for better lives forward, and that struggle forward comes through information, news, forms of organizing, debate, and struggle. Because we live in a society where you have this class and social antagonism weighed heavily, so heavily, against the working people themselves.
Mark Muskrath, what do you think we need to struggle?
Yeah, we always need to struggle. The issue is, what are we struggling for? But I think this teacher talk is a forum for dialogue. And as I listen to our conversation, it becomes apparent that, you know, through conversation comes enlightenment. You know, the last thing that Mark said, I can, as a professional, can get on board with. And I also think that John Q. Public could get on board with that if we said, look, the way $9 billion is not being spent effectively, let's start there. Let's get our own house in order. And then if we determine we need more money, we can come to the public and ask. My concern is the public is going to be like, guys, we've been giving you $9 billion for a long time. What's the dysfunction? You know, and that's why you get the breakthrough for the corporate types, the charter types, to come in and say, see, these public schools and the public union, teacher unions, cannot get it together. They can't even teach Johnny how to read. So, you know, the public wants public schools that can teach their kids at the least basic educational skills. So Kill Radio is a forum. Teacher Talk is a forum for us to dialogue about what's the best move forward. I am by no means a defender of the status quo here.
And Mark,
you know, I think something that we should mention here that we're probably missing out on the two sides of this discussion, which, you know, I'm looking both at Mark and Neil. Both of these are actually needed. You absolutely have to have what Neil is saying in place. If you don't, you don't have whistleblowers. You don't have anybody drawing attention to what needs that attention. On the other hand, you also need what Mark is saying. You have to think about what you're about to do. Again, whatever you do, it comes with risks. You want to be absolutely certain that the pathway that you're taking is the one that you've rationally thought out and decided is the best one to follow. So there's not this great distance between these two approaches, if you want to refer to them that way. They both need each other, because if you go in one direction, you run the risk of things getting out of control and turning into a wildcat episode. If you go to the other, in the other direction entirely, you become too conservative, too inactive. You're too much of a voyeur or a spectator rather than an activist. So you've got to blend these two. That's the only way anything effective will happen that will have a lasting effect rather than a temporary effect. It's not just a case of getting the media attention. It's being there afterward, not having your few moments of fame and then dropping off the radar.
All right. Well, it's 1:23. We could use the 7 minutes. You look like you got something else now. But I think that was a good stopping point, too, and we could continue this next week, you know, and with different views added to the mix. What do you guys think?
You want it for 5 more minutes?
Okay, 5 more minutes.
You
got it.
Summing up. Well, to sum up here, we've gone through the questions of the issues of what working people and parents and students and teachers are facing in the schools. They are on the defensive, and we need to turn the tide against these corporate-led attacks and assaults that are coming from above through their political system. And the question is how that we wanted to get into, and I think we have discussed this, well, to some degree on the show, is the question of the proactive response of the students, teachers, and parents. And the question there is to how can we help to advance their ability to organize so they can gain the consciousness and understanding to try to overcome these enormous social problems that are weighing down on them. And obviously the existing political methods of merely passively voting for doing donkey work or elephant work is not going to do the job. Relying on six-figured plus perks, union leaders, that are tied to the political systems and only want to advance their own careers is not going to do the job. The real organizing and ability to fight back has to come from below. It has to come from the working people themselves, not by our diktat. We can put forward our views and our program and our platform and actively work and organize with them. But the actual struggles themselves, they are going to have to take the lead in fighting these things out. We are pointing out that the one of the main things that has to be pointed out is this is like a these attacks are like a battlefield, these attacks on education. If you the more you allow the attacks to go on without resistance, the worse they get. The momentum goes over to the side that's winning. And right now, that side is the corporate side, the profiteering side, the speculator side, and the side of bureaucratic corruption. And as the way people are going to counter this is through their own fight backs and activities.
Thank you, Neil. So I guess we're closing up. Mark, did you want to?
All I can say is thanks to Mark and Neil. This was a very productive program. I mean, it would have been productive if either one of them had shown up alone. But the fact that both of them were here and talked this out to the very limit that it needs to be talked about, at least at where we're at right now, I think we should be quite happy with those results.
Mm-hmm. Good. I think I'm happy. And Mark, did you even need to...
No, I think that I just concur. I think conversation is always productive, especially with people who've done some really hard thinking about the issues. And, you know, I just think more thinking needs to be done and more conversating needs to be done and then take it to our members, to our friends and peers and you know, bring the issue out there and break that media blackout.
All right, great. I think this was another successful teacher talk. And we'll see you guys all next week or the following week or one of these weeks. All right? Good?
Sure.
Good. All right.